On today's special edition of the Citation Podcast, our professional support solicitor, Emma McGrath, is joined by the NDNA's Director of Business Development, Cara Brundle, and the Director of Policy and Communications, Jonathan Broadbury, to provide nursery leaders with a roadmap to stay resilient and prepared for challenges in the early years sector. We've been working in partnership with the NDNA for the last 15 years to provide guidance and support on all things compliance to the early years sector, so we're really excited to have them on the podcast today.
Thanks for joining us today, and thank you, Cara and Jonathan. It's lovely to see you.
Nice to be here.
Hi, Emma.
So today we're looking at providing nursery leaders with a roadmap to stay resilient and prepared for challenges in the early years sector. So I suppose first thing to look at is really why compliance matters sort of now more than ever.
Yeah, so we know nurseries want to do the right thing by their employees and the children in their setting. They take their responsibilities really seriously. And because nurseries are caring for and educating children there, it's a highly regulated business and there can be profound consequences when things go wrong. So Citation can help them to get things right from the outset, which is really important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, we're certainly seeing a lot of employment law changes coming on, which I'll sort of summarise in a minute. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think with those changes, it that's what makes it important to be current, so you're not falling behind. And then what we're seeing as well is on the flip side, as more government funding comes in, some of those conditions will be attached to that. You know, it's already happening in Scotland with the national standard. They're looking at the statutory guidance in England, and there's more conditions in Wales attached to the flying start. So if you fall behind, then it's a lot more work to kind of catch up, and the funding's going to be attached to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know from an employment law point of view, you know, the kind of needing to keep on top of the changes is hard. And I presume that's, there's going to be changes to safeguarding and things, is there? I presume it's sort of, there's developing lots of different areas of regulatory.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things happening in nurseries. Like, you know, we've thought about recruitment, and there's changes coming along the line to the EYFS around safer recruitment and what the requirements of safeguarding training is going to look like. So there's a lot to look at it from that point of view. And, you know, that's already in place in Wales, for example, as well. So there's, it's not just about regulations in the setting, but actually that recruitment angle as well.
And just sort of just give a brief overview of some of the employment law changes that are coming. You know, we're seeing day one right to bring an unfair dismissal claim, changes to 0 hours contracts. So if somebody works a sort of set pattern, it's looking to have to offer them guaranteed hours going forward. And also changes in terms of statutory sick pay, which again is going to sort of be another expense for nurseries, which they've already got a lot of expense already. So just done a podcast on that actually that'll be released soon. So more detail, but yes. One really important area for nurseries will be recruitment. I think obviously there's a recruitment crisis going on in nurseries at the moment, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. Nurseries are struggling to find the right staff. And so when they're making decisions about how to fill those spaces in their rooms, they need to be able to do that on the basis of understanding what the implications will be for them further down the line, financially and in terms of pay and benefits and HR legislation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you definitely want to be engaging people from the beginning, and that obviously is also about getting the right people in from the start. There will be the regulatory requirements around sort of safeguarding, but also obviously things like right to work checks must be done before somebody starts employment. So not sort of saying, oh, come in with your ID documents on the first day. You know, it absolutely must be done beforehand. And criminal record checks, so an enhanced DBS check in England and Wales. I think that can take a while to come back, can it? Does that cause headaches for nursery owners?
Yeah, I think it varies. But they're obviously often quite keen to get that person to start as soon as possible.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
It really depends on some of the things that you've got in the form and the person themselves and whether they've got all the records handy locally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess it's thinking as well, isn't it, about the selection process in recruitment. So, things nursery owners can do to get, you know, to select easily. So thinking about, I suppose, having, two managers independently shortlisting, for example. Think about the interview questions you want to ask, perhaps having like a set criteria for the answers as well, so it's easier to be able to justify the markings. But equally, that also helps to hone in, you know, what do we want out of the person coming into this position? And perhaps keeping like job description and person specifications reviewed, and up to date. Maybe there's a tweak you could make to perhaps widen the candidates that could be applying.
On top of that, again, we're talking about a changing landscape. So for providers in England, there's going to be a new route to having staff count in the ratios, which is this evidence-based route. So that's going to be coming in now so that it's available from September. And it's an opportunity to look at, whether your existing staff have skills and experience that can be, useful in that level three type role, even if they've not got the qualifications there. Mm-hmm. But I suppose when you're looking to recruit people as well, if they're coming with experience but not the qualifications, then is this route going to be an option for you down the line to make sure you are meeting your ratios without, again, somebody who might not want to or be able to achieve those qualifications having the ability to work at the level that their skills and experience reflects.
Yeah. Okay, so next, if we can have a look at sort of navigating funding challenges and opportunities, what's the state of funding in early years at the moment?
I would say that's the million-dollar question, but it's certainly a very live one. Obviously, we know that from September in England, that's when the big jump happens. So all those children who are 9 months to 3 years old now, getting 15 hours, they'll be going up to 30 hours from September, and that's where a lot of the extra recruitment into the sector needs to come for, because that creates a lot of extra demand for places.
Yeah, absolutely. And what sort of work have you been doing at the NDNA in terms of the funding?
So we know at NDNA that the impact of all these changes is that nurseries are under huge financial pressure. We've been campaigning to highlight how this will impact children and families. Children are ultimately the ones that are going to suffer from nurseries struggling to pay their bills. Mm. Higher parent fees are inevitable, unfortunately, because nurseries are trying to cover their costs. Higher employee costs means that nurseries can't afford to provide the number of places that the government are looking for to meet expansion plans and demand. And in some cases, unfortunately, this will lead to nursery closures. So we've got an underfunded childcare campaign that we're running at the moment, which has been designed to highlight that and really draw attention to the struggles that nurseries are having and how that's going to impact on children and families.
In terms of what's happening in Wales, we know the Welsh Government is in its final phase of expanding the two-year-old places through Flying Start. And again, that comes with its own local requirements in terms of qualified staff and other aspects of it. And then finally, Scotland they're currently trialling a 0-14 offer. We know that they're now entering into the 0-5 part of that in six local authority areas. So it's being piloted and seeing whether it's viable. But with elections coming in Scotland and Wales just over 12 months away, it's going to be a hot topic politically, because obviously parents want to see more support. Mm. So it could be subject to more change in the future. So in terms of the national insurance contributions, a lot of people have worked out what that means for them. We've looked at an average nursery kind of facing, more than £40,000 of additional costs due to the combination between national living wage increases and the national insurance contributions. But if people haven't sat down and start to think about that combined impact, that needs to be happening now. We've just done a survey and what's coming out on average is that staffing bills are increasing by about 15%. And people are saying that around 7.5% of that is purely from the national insurance contribution changes. So if people haven't started engaging with that or have put it on the to-do pile, it's something to really get around now.
Yeah.
But we have had some good news on that side of things. So nurseries, regardless of how much of their income comes from government funding, will be eligible for the employment allowance. So at the moment, if you've got, we think, about 30 to 35 members of staff, you've probably reached the cap that stops you getting employment allowance. That cap's being removed from April, so it is opening up the employment allowance, which is going to be £10,500. So it's not going to offset the cost of the increase in NICs, but it's another source of help. But because it's a monthly thing, people need to be aware of it and how to get it through the payroll process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's key, isn't it? Like you say, you're planning ahead for these things. And I suppose just to put it back to the Employment Rights Bill as well, the potential changes that will be coming under that, which is probably sort of, you know, around 2026, I think they'll come in. But it's definitely good to be on top of these, you know, what's coming and to look ahead to that. So another potential change is to statutory sick pay, which could be another expense for employers. So they're talking about getting rid of the first three waiting days for statutory sick pay. At the moment, they're unpaid, but then actually sickness will be paid from day one of absence. So again, those are the kind of things that people need to be aware of and planning for.
Absolutely. And when 75% of your costs are staff costs, that can add up to a lot when your budgets are already very stretched.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jonathan, previously you touched on, well, you said about recruitment being really important, which obviously it is, but I think equally retention is as well, isn't it? You don't want to, you know, it's all very well recruiting, but you don't want to lose people at the other end either. So, you know, recruitment's expensive and you want to retain the good staff that you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously, as you train up new staff, if you have high turnover and you have to train up lots of new staff, you've got a lot of experience that's left the organization. At the same time, it takes them time to get up to the culture and the way that you work. So there's a loss there for people as well. So it's not just about the cost of recruitment. Actually, what are you losing in terms of quality and less productivity in crudest terms if people are being trained up.
Yeah, and I guess for parents as well, you want to, if you know your child likes a particular member of staff, you want to see them there, don't they? Because they build up relationships.
Yeah, that continuity is really important, and the key worker is an important person in the child's life. So if you can retain those people and they understand you and your culture and they know the children, then that's obviously the best way. Yeah,
yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose one thing about retention, you know, one way to retain staff is to invest in their development. That's always really important. That we talk a lot at Citation about investing in your people in terms of, you know, training or mentoring or, you know, sort of support you can offer.
Yeah, absolutely. If you can afford it, then offering additional training and development opportunities is really helpful. It's a great way to keep good staff interested and motivated, get them thinking about their own practice. And it's rewarding for practitioners to learn and apply new skills and to be able to share them with their colleagues and see them positively impacting children in the setting. So new kit skills and qualifications, they're a route to career progression as well. So that's a way of retaining your staff, isn't it? And an opportunity to show that they're keen and willing to learn. And nurseries need their staff to be confident and to have the knowledge and skills that are needed to support every child in their setting. And a lot of those children we know are coming through with increasing levels of need. So if you've got your staff sort of trained up to be able to identify those needs and to have specific skills around it and then sharing that within the team, then that's really helpful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess in terms of, you touched again, another area that can be expensive is training. But I suppose sort of, like you say, working with members of staff and developing them, perhaps through mentoring and things, you know, that can be sort of, well, part of a busy job, but part of a job as opposed to sort of extra cost.
Yeah, absolutely. And mentoring, you know, we talk a lot about attitude and you can learn the skills. You know, if you're struggling to recruit people at that higher level or recruit people at level three, if you've got a really good member of staff who you can mentor up, prepare for the future. And if you get that going, you know, as you go along, then you're more likely to be able to recruit within and keep those good members of staff and keep them developing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think another really important area is induction. So, you know, the nurse's found the right candidate. They're really keen for them to come in and to start, but it's about welcoming them properly into the nursery and giving them that. I think I always think probationary periods are brilliant as being sort of a, you know, it's a trial period. It's a chance for the nursery to sort of maybe tweak out any issues in performance, but equally for the employee, they can sort of raise any issues that they want without it feeling like a big deal. And having a really careful induction process where you're sort of really thinking about, well, who do we need them to meet? What do we need to show them? You know, I'd imagine that that's really important in nurseries.
Absolutely. Yeah. So important. And I think sometimes you do a job for a long time, you think some things are obvious, but it's really important in an induction to spell that out and really be very clear about what's expected of that person in that role, what their role is, how they fit within the wider organisation and the wider team. You want them to have a good sense of purpose and for them to feel valued and supported from day one. And you also want them to understand what the culture is like in your nursery, what's mm-hmm. expected in terms of their behaviours as well and their attitude. I think one good idea is to buddy people up with a more established member of the team so that if they've got any questions, they might not feel comfortable initially mm-hmm. coming to you as a manager, then they can go to somebody else and ask those questions that might seem sort of obvious to you but might not be for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a brilliant point. And again, it's not something that it's just about the organisation, isn't it? It's not something that can needs to be at great expense at all. So I think, you know, each time you induct a new member of staff, have a think about, well, what worked well there, what didn't. And it can be an ongoing process to sort of tweak that induction process. But it's definitely something that you can have really, really properly planned out.
Yeah,
it's a really useful tool.
Absolutely.
I think it's important as well to remember that there are national induction frameworks in Scotland and Wales. So it's not only, you know, good practice from the employer's point of view and, you know, really getting that culture for your nursery, both as a working environment, but also what you want your children and families to experience. But there is also, you know, those national frameworks as well to work towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, obviously another compliance area that needs to be ticked off.
Yep.
And I suppose sort of there's a lot of talk now, isn't there, about well-being within employment settings, you know, obviously within nurseries. So, I mean, again, thinking about sort of, you know, mental health and work-life balance, that's, you know, a real key issue for nurseries.
Absolutely. I mean, working with children is joyful, it's rewarding, but nursery practitioners, they've got an enormous responsibility, really, for a relatively low level of pay. So it's important to ensure that they're properly supported and that you're sort of keeping an eye on them and that you can spot if they're stressed or anxious or unhappy, whether that's to do with something that's going on in the workplace or something at home, because that can easily be reflected in their interactions with the children and you want to nip that in the bud and give them the support that they need.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And things sort of, you know, with mental health, it's about sort of an ongoing conversation, isn't it? So again, it's about knowing your staff and having that sort of ability, well, open communications and for people to come and raise issues with you if they have got something that they want to talk about. So it's part of the culture, isn't it, effectively?
Yeah. Oh, I think you touched on work-life balance as well. And one of the pieces of research that we talk about is, I think the Anna Freud Centre did work on, you know, stress levels within the early years workforce. So, you know, identifying the particular issues for our sector. And one of the things that came out top was that the amount of work that does have to happen and balancing that with, you know, family commitments. And that is a key source of stress. So, you know, there's no easy way around it, but as you say, that openness and that engagement on the stresses and the pressures that are on staff, it's a crucial consideration.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there has been, you know, generally in the law, you've seen a push to make flexible working the norm. But I think sort of, you know, since the pandemic, there's been a lot more hybrid working and working at home. But of course, that's not, you know, nursery, you need to be in with the kids, don't you? So there isn't that, that same option to do that kind of work. So it's more about maybe if there's any kind of flexibility with the hours, but equally you've got to cover the ratios. So again, that's difficult.
Absolutely. It's really difficult for flexible working is very difficult for nurseries because they open for specific hours and it has to be there on site. So I think it really, it's about being flexible with people, recognising how they're feeling, how they're interacting and having, you know, sensitivity to the mood in the room and being able to address those challenges as they arise.
Yeah, and absolutely. And if somebody feels that their employer cares about them and is interested in them, you know, that all, and there's sort of, you know, can work towards perhaps some team initiatives, or, you know, it's that kind of, you know, fostering the relationships at work, all those things are, they're actually things that don't cost extra money, but are really crucial to retaining employees and keeping people engaged.
Absolutely. And listening and allowing people to sort of make suggestions and knowing that they can make some decisions. And sort of provide challenge where it's needed as well. It's really important, I think, for a culture that people feel that valued and, yes, and responsible.
Yeah. And I suppose that ties in again to sort of like inclusive workplaces as well. You know, having the nursery as a, you know, a supportive and inclusive place to come in. Thanks so much, Cara and Jonathan. So, yeah, I think we've sort of obviously covered, you know, how important compliance, funding, retention, safer recruitment are, you know, to creating a future-proof nursery. And we've been looking at the sort of the, you know, the steps that the nursery owners can take. At Citation, I know we've worked closely with the NDNA to produce health and safety and HR and employment law resources that really fit for nurseries, you know, really appropriate for nurseries and giving some really clear guidance. I know in NDNA you've got various resources as well.
Yeah, and we're really delighted to be working with Citation still to provide those access to those resources. And, you know, we're here to make nurseries' lives a bit easier. We know that nurseries do the most important job in the world, educating and caring for our youngest children. And NDNA membership really is there to make sure that they can focus on that, and we can give them sort of expert advice for their peace of mind, try and make their lives easier, make sure they can access the services and resources that they need as cheaply as possible so that they can focus on doing what they do best.
Yeah, brilliant.
And when it comes to the policy landscape, what we're really focused on is making sure that when these when regulations and all these requirements are put onto early years settings, we're getting the voice in terms of how that's practically going to impact people. And also, we're never going to stop talking about the F word, which is funding, because it's a growing part of the landscape. And if the biggest customers of nurseries aren't paying a fair share, then it's not going to work for the whole sector. So we're always campaigning on that side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for joining us on this episode. We hope it's given you some inspiration and practical guidance to navigate the challenges of running a nursery with confidence. As the early years sectors continues to evolve, staying proactive and prepared can set you apart. So whether it's refining your processes, supporting your team, or planning for the future, every small step you take helps build a stronger foundation for your nursery. So if you have any questions or need tailored advice, don't hesitate to reach out to us. But until next time, keep creating spaces where both your staff and the children in your care can thrive.